I'll be mind your words. I'll be recording you, Yusra.
Oh, good Lord.
So I did manage to download your presentation. And
okay. Did you get the more recent one?
I got the more recent one, yes.
Wonderful.
And I'm just grabbing the keyboard now so that I can accompany you. There are 18 slides, I understand, and you instruct me when I have to change slides.
Okay.
And then when you're ready, if you're ready, you can start.
Okay, I think I'm ready. I tried to condense into today's presentation kind of the theme that I was hoping to contribute, obviously, over the longer time span that I was intending to be at the meeting. I'm going to say ahead of time, there's quite a bit of content here. I'm going to just touch on the basics of it during my talk, and then what I'll do is I have a much more detailed version of the presentation available, and Jan, I'll suggest that we put that on the website so that people can access that if they want to see the references to the literature that I'm talking about. Basically, one of the themes that I've kind of become much more interested in recent years, I initially was very, very interested in looking at problem solving and science education in the context of problem solving. Recently, I've also started getting very intrigued by the notion of attitudes and how that relates to not only to how well children do in science education, but also in terms of the decisions that they make later on in life, in terms of applying the principles that they get from what they learn in the formal setting. So, next slide. To give you a sense of, I looked at Jan's work in terms of what he had laid out, conceptually as the aims for the meeting. And I think that there are three main areas of that my talk today is related to. The first one is looking at the conditions that in formal settings contribute to the development of scientific mind. The second one is the establishing of practical ways to improve the existing efforts to develop the scientific mind. And in that context, really, the only thing that I can contribute or that the literature can contribute at this time is the recognition that there is a need for improvement in terms of the issues that arise from attitudes, but we'll explore that in a bit more detail. And then finally, the aim of trying to break open very narrowly defined research agendas and practices. This is, for those of you that are in the field of education or educational research, is something that tremendously plagues the field, and I think that will be evidenced to some extent by the things we'll talk about. And next slide.
You have it.
Okay, great. What I'm actually going to do is I'm going to talk a little. I just want to give kind of a quick overview of the issue of science and the economy, very, very brief, just to kind of point to the relevance of the topic of science attitudes. Then I'm going to tell you a little bit about, from the psychological perspective, how people look at what attitudes are. And then from there, report a little bit on research that has been conducted in the field of educational research that relates to science attitudes. So one of the things that I think, and I think we all kind of read about this, for those of us that are coming from the developed countries, is that there is a phenomenal kind of chasm in terms of the increasing demand for science professionals, and at the same time, the reduction of enrollment in science courses and science majors in college. And this is just a little bit of information. There's a 12% increase in demand for science professionals in the UK over the 10-year period that ends in 2006. On the other hand, actually, in the UK, there has been, 25% reduction in the number of students that at the A level, which is the last level of secondary education, at the A level are taking science classes. You also see that there's a significant kind of pattern in terms of the number of scientists per million of populace in a variety of countries, Japan definitely leading the way. I find personally that these numbers, I double-checked them because I found them to be remarkably low in general. But Japan is leading the way, and as you kind of go down, you see that as you head into the developing country environments, Latin America, Asia, and Africa, that you're operating at about 10% of, am I right about that? Yeah, at most 10% of what you have in the most developed nations. And this also has relevance because there's some research that's being carried out for those of you that are interested in kind of cross-national research. There's some research that's in the process of being carried out right now under a project called ROSE, which stands for the Relevance of Science Education, where they are surveying students, I believe it's 10, 11-year-olds, on their perceptions of the relevance of science education. And the preliminary results, this is a huge study that's being conducted, the preliminary results are starting to show that in developing nations, the perception of the relevance of science ed is extremely strong among children at that age. However, obviously, many of those children will not have opportunities to get any substantial amount of higher education. And the reverse tends to be the case in the developed nations, where the relevance of science education is not nearly as well defined in the minds of the students, but they, of course, do have access to greater educational opportunities than in the developing country context. Okay, next slide.
Okay, well, I'll change the slides, Yusra. I can't, and this is the only way I can remind you where there's a 20-minute limit to the talk that you have, so keep track of the time, please.
I am indeed doing that.
Okay, great.
I believe I've used 5 minutes, right?
You used, yes, slightly more than 5 minutes, actually.
All right, well, I'm going to bargain you
never
for
mind.
Five.
I know you're negotiating it.
Very good. And the longer we negotiate, the more time passes.
Yes, so please carry on.
Okay, just to tell you a little bit about attitudes. Attitudes basically are defined as an expression or of our evaluation of something or someone. So in the case of science attitudes, it's our evaluation of the concept of science. It has a specific target, and so again, in the science attitudes concept, the target is science. And there's also associated with an attitude is a notion of evaluative consistency, which means that you generally have kind of the same perception of that construct over time. So your attitude towards science is something that once you have acquired that, it is fairly stable. It doesn't change very much. Attitudes also kind of have, like many things that have to do with social sciences, it's a very, very fuzzy concept. And so one of the things that happens when you start looking at the literature and the research is that there are lots and lots of different dimensions to the idea of attitudes, and those dimensions are measured in different ways, and so that runs you into a little bit of trouble. Next slide. Quick thing on why attitudes matter. Back in the, I believe it was in the late 50s, there was the people first started kind of referring to the concept of the swing from science. And that is, again, something that is still very much prevalent today. And what it refers to is the idea that children and adults seeking higher education are moving away from electing science-related subjects or specializations. Related to that is that part of that swing from science may be explained by the impact that attitudes have on implicit motivation. Next slide. The image before you, the chart before you kind of elaborates on that a little bit, and I'd like to just have a chance to explain it. Basically, the idea is that when you start off with an attitude is, like I mentioned before, a very stable thing that once it's formed has a, you know, does not have a tremendous amount of variability to it unless something really significant happens. It plays a very significant role in what they refer to as intrinsic motivation. And intrinsic motivation is that motivation that comes from within you. So you might have some the things that drive you from within that cause you to do certain things are kind of captured under the notion of intrinsic motivation. The research suggests further that intrinsic motivation has a very strong impact on the level of effort with which somebody engages in learning a task. And so if you have a high level of intrinsic motivation, it impacts the amount of effort that you put into the task, what the level of complexity of tasks that you look for. And that subsequently, if that is associated with, you know, a more positive and enjoyable interaction with the subject matter, will connect to what they refer to as continuing motivation, which is the tendency to continue along the line of what you've been doing. So basically, if you take this and put it in a very concrete sense, you might say, if a student has a positive attitude, is positively disposed towards science or science education, their intrinsic motivation in that area will be high. As a result, they will engage to a more profound degree with the subject matter, and if that yields positive results, they will have higher levels of continuing motivation and therefore be more likely to seek out opportunities to continue learning science-related things. Does that make sense?
Yep, it does.
Yep, okay.
Next slide.
Next slide. Yes, sir. Okay, real quickly, there's only one slide of good news, and there's like the remainder of it is not so good news from the research on attitudes towards science education and towards science. The good news is that they have found that, for example, in physics courses, that applications-based courses have a positive impact on students' attitudes toward physics. They've also found over just repeated studies in many different contexts that attitudes are very strongly impacted by the quality of teaching. That's a good thing because the quality of teaching is something that is within our control. But it's not a simple thing to address. Generally, students tend to feel that science is useful and interesting. There's a lot of research that supports that notion, but that runs us into hot water when we start comparing that to the attitudes that students have in relation to science education, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. And the last bit of good news is that the percentage of girls going into science-related fields, at least in the UK, has increased quite a bit over the last few years. So that's the good news. Next slide. This is a quote from a research study. These are the actual words that a student used to explain the tendency for turning away from science in college. And I'll give you a second to read it because I thought it was very, very interesting. So basically, it's just this like kind of captures in a very significant way the fundamental issues that tend to crop up in poorly developed or poorly implemented science education. Let's go to the next slide.
Okay.
Numbers of students enrolling in science-related courses are going down quite a bit. One of the variables that continues to be very strongly playing a role in terms of students' attitudes towards the sciences is gender. And that's a very significant problem, because obviously that's not something that we can do anything about in terms of, I mean, we can do things about it in terms of trying to improve that, but that's a societal issue largely and is one that's difficult to address. And the other thing that is being found is that the attitudes towards school science just, I mean, they like hit rock bottom as soon as children go into secondary school. And so there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of discussion about that and the fact that it is quite possible that school science at the secondary level is actually turning students away from science, beyond that or outside of the classroom. Next slide.
Yep. 5 minutes left, you, Sam.
Yes, I got it. If you look at the data that's on this slide, what you'll see is that there is among students who are turning away from science courses, there is still a very high level of appreciation for science as a subject area. So you've got 72% of students saying that science is important, but 40 of them also saying that science classes are very boring. So that kind of supports the thing I was referring to in the previous slides. Another thing is interesting is that boys have consistently got a more positive attitude towards science in terms of school science than girls. This effect is stronger in physics than in biology, and it is strongest in general science, which I thought was a very, very interesting thing, because the general science courses were actually largely developed to try to provide opportunities to or try to kind of address the gender gap that appears when students go into the specialized sciences later on. Next slide.
Okay.
Basically, the news for physics is very, very depressing. I'm going to skip over it, but basically physics is the one subject area that where the male to female ratio remains extremely out of proportion. Lots of boys versus very few girls in that field. A lot of students reporting that they do not enjoy physics at all, which is contrary to the other sciences. The percentage of girls pursuing physics-related degrees in college is reducing. Next slide. Next slide. We're now on the unexpected news.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
One of the things that is explaining that children are using to explain their decision to leave out of science after they've passed the compulsory bit is that they feel that it will cheat them out of a well-rounded liberal education. I thought that was kind of an interesting a bit of news. We'll hit the next slide. Another thing that, for me, my area of specialization is instructional design, and so I do a lot of work on preparing high-quality instructional materials that are intended to positively impact not only how well students do, but also their attitude toward what they are learning. There's been tons and tons of research that has been done trying out new and innovative ways to prepare materials, to develop instructional techniques, and so on. And in spite of all of that being studied with a tremendous amount of effort, there's basically nothing that indicates that any of those types of interventions have an impact on how well on students' attitudes toward the sciences, which is depressing. Next slide.
Yep.
Science teaching is the thing that appears to be most strongly correlated with science attitudes, and that's something that that I thought was very, very interesting. Is Leon in the room?
Yep.
Leon, the stuff that you do with TAMS that seems to connect very, very strongly to this, because one of the things that comes through, and in fact, Chris, you'll think you'll probably find this interesting too. Because of the various initiatives that have taken place at IMSA, teachers that are specializing in their subject area, so for example, physics teachers, if they are teaching physics classes, tend to have the most enthusiastic attitude toward their teaching. The enthusiasm of the teaching is what is cited independently by the students as being one of the most significant determinants of how much they enjoy their science classes. So this really kind of reinforces the idea that the need for having well-developed teachers in the classrooms who have the opportunity to teach what they specialize in. And that also, in the countries that are following standardized curricula, has implications for that, because one would assume that the standardized curricula kind of go against this notion. Okay, last two, three slides are basically some questions that I came up with that I thought might be of interest for the folks on that end to explore as you kind of go through the rest of the colloquium. First one relates to the distinction between having having scientific training be something that helps with the development of a useful specialist as opposed to a truly educated man. This again relates to the research that I referred to earlier and what are the implications of that. The second issue that I thought of is the sorry, Jan, by the way, did you actually change the slide?
Yeah, you're on that slide.
Okay, good. I forgot to mention it.
I concluded it myself.
Very well. Second thing is, again, in relation to the finding that the general science seems to have the strongest differentiation between boys' attitudes and girls' attitudes towards science, a lot of children in developing countries are not going to make it past general science. Because I believe in most cases the specialized sciences are only tackled from grade 9 onward. So that kind of raises the question, does this doom girls in developing nations to not have any, to have kind of a negative predisposition toward the sciences? Next slide.
Yep.
Here's a conclusion that came out of one of the studies that I thought was interesting. Actual experience with science at school does not seem to be related to attitude towards science as a worthwhile societal enterprise. Now, we kind of looked at the data for that earlier. Therefore, the conclusion is science at school and science out of school should be treated as distinct and separate entities. I find that a terrifying notion, but this is a conclusion that was drawn, and so I wonder, what the rest of you would feel about that. Next is the issue, kind of what they refer to as the smallest school, which is the family. How do we ensure that it contributes to building the scientific mind? Because the family environment is really what is most fundamental in terms of the attitudes that children develop toward the sciences. Next slide. Thought this was an interesting conclusion as well from a research study. The essential irony of a discipline that offers intellectual liberation from the shackles of received wisdom, which is the sciences, of course, is that the education it offers is authoritarian, dogmatic, and non-reflexive. And again, that's, I think it kind of speaks to the conclusions that are all around evident, but brings up some very serious issues as well. And the final thing is that in spite of that we know lots about how children feel about the sciences and how they feel about science education, how that differs between genders, socioeconomic status, quality of teaching, and so on and so forth, we know a lot about that, but we still know very, very little about how and why attitudes towards science change. And attitudes are stable, knowledge is ephemeral in many cases. So what can we do to bring clarity to this? Did I make it?
Yeah, well.
All right.
I think you got your message across.
Okay, now for two of the presentation. That was just the introduction.
You got your message across in 24 minutes.
By my standards, that's pretty good, yeah.
It's not too bad by your standard, indeed. And because we ran a bit out of time, I have to unceremoniously cut you off and invite the next speaker.